At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
Was she playing Sherlock? You know, was she going, you know, this is the last place I saw him.
Right.
I didn't see him go in the house, even though she says she did later. But in reality, I don't believe she saw him go in the house because he didn't go in the house.
Yeah.
And it was that just all of those pieces coming together going, I got to look in that area. And and I'm hoping he's there. But I'm going to say, there he is, there he is, even though you can't see him at that moment in time. They literally had to dig him out of the snow. And, you know, in a body object that size, and you got a lot of snow drifting, you're not going to see anything. It's like I've said it before. It's like you got lawn tools out in your yard and then the first snow comes in. It's like, oh, there's my shovel. You discover next spring or whatever. It's that's how that works. So the fact that she knew to make a beeline to him right at that moment, that's a hard one.
It's a hard one. Yeah. It's another bizarre aspect to this that, it, as you say, it doesn't bode well for her. It, you know, when you add it all up, did I hit him? Did I hit him? I think I hit him. Could I have hit him? And, oh, by the way, there's the body that no one else could see. Yeah, it's significant.
What does it say about her, the fact that she's, you know, could he be cheating on me? Which seemed to be an overwhelming theme with her in the relationship. Always paranoid, very afraid that John's going to leave her or whatever. Those sort of elements to it. And when we know more about Karen, when we see the way she's acted in the documentary, I mean, one could say there's a lot of narcissistic traits going on here. To me, it follows a bit of a pattern of, okay, they're going to act this way. They're probably going to act that way too. And then her lack of taking any sort of responsibility here and just blaming it on the very people who were actually trying to help her find him that morning.
Yeah, exactly.
What does that speak of the greater picture here of Karen Reed? I know we can't diagnose her, but, you know, if we're just looking at traits, what does it say?
Well, when I heard the content of those angry phone calls to him, the accusatory raging phone calls when he was dead in the yard, it made me think of the borderline personality disorder, which is one of the best sentences I ever heard to describe an interaction with a borderline personality is, I hate you, don't leave me.
Yeah, the book.
And it's that, it's a wonderful title for a book. And so that's what came to my mind. And so, yes, this is a person who may have narcissistic tendencies. They are very good at giving a certain kind of appearance, but they have a lot of fragility inside. And people with borderline traits tend to be very, very jealous and always concerned that the person that they're attached to is going to be leaving them for someone else. And so when you have somebody who may just have those tendencies, we can't diagnose if she's that kind of personality or not, but she could have those tendencies. And then when you throw the alcohol in the mix, which takes the thinking brain offline, and you're just getting this reptilian firing going on with this outrage and accusations, that's why I say, you know, if I were working with her, I would say we've got to start with alcohol and get honest about that, because I think that had a big influence on everything.
What do we see typically also with people with those sort of traits in terms of accepting accountability anything in their lives?
Not talented at accepting accountability in the long run. Yeah. They may have moments where they're flooded with emotion and they feel intense guilt and they overblame themselves for things. But in the long run, they tend to be good at crafting stories where everything that goes wrong in their lives is not their fault. And it really did strike me as, again, I'll use the best word I can come up with, lacking integrity. for these people, these women that got up in the middle of the night to try to help her, you know, and I consider 5:30 in the morning, the middle of the night still, right? Yeah. It's dark in a storm. And she called in pain, and they were right there for her. And then to turn it around on them like this is, you know, lacks integrity.
This, I'm curious about other elements of her life, and we don't know them about, but I'm sure the people who do know Karen Reid are probably looking at this going, this seems par for the course. At least that's what I would be guessing. Maybe that's just my conjecture, but I'd be very curious about other elements of her life where she's been able to take responsibility for the simplest of things. Or, I mean, the biggest of things like this. Obviously, this is on the far extreme of bad, of killing someone or allegedly killing someone. You know, all the way down to, you know, did you eat the rest of the pickle chips? You know, it's true because she's eating her pickle chips the other day. You know, but I could see that where it's like, no, I just had a few. You know, and when it comes to people like that, do they ever take responsibility? I mean, sometimes it seems like pathologically impossible with individuals like that. And I don't know about Karen. I'm just talking from my own life. But it seems like there is just a block up that will not allow them to get there, even on the simplest things. It's like kryptonite. They're going to melt if they somehow stand up and say, yes, I did that. And it may not be what other people wanted, but it may be something simple. But there just seems to be a really difficult time getting there.
Yeah, it is difficult getting there. I can say some do. I have seen people with, we'll say, narcissistic borderline traits, if they're not severe. They may be very defended and that, you know, coming in with the I did no wrong attitude. But sometimes in therapy with reflection and a certain amount of insight over time, they can start to see their contribution to things. And you can see a shift with that. But I don't know what the percentages are. And you certainly see lots of people who never go there.
I have one more clip here I want to play. This is another one from Carrie Roberts, and this is her talking about what Karen was talking about that night, talking about that if she killed him, this is Karen, that she would kill herself if she killed him. Let's take a look at this, and we'll talk on the other side.
I didn't know what was going to happen. At some point in the car, as we're driving, she was on the phone with her mother, and I think when we were driving, we got all the way to the elementary school, and Karen said to me, if anything happens to John, I'm going to kill myself. You're going to have to take care of the kids. And I said, nobody's dying. Nobody's killing themselves. Let's not think about that. And then one of the officers called me and said, do you have Karen Reid with you? And I said, yes. And he said, could you please turn around and bring her back? Her parents are saying that she's suicidal, so we're going to take her to the hospital and section her. I said, okay. I didn't get far, so I turned around, went back. At some point, she was on the phone with her mother, and I got on the phone with her mother and said, I'm going to be heading to the hospital. Let me give you my phone number. It's the same hospital John's at. I'm assuming they're going to the same. That's where Canton takes everybody. And her mother said, please make sure that they don't let her have her bag. There are things in her bag, medicine I don't want her to have. So I said, okay, I will. So we got back to the house, and she got in the ambulance, and one of the EMTs asked me for her phone. So I handed that over, and I said, the mother wants to make sure that she does not have her purse because there's medication in there that they don't want her to have.
Did you see the defendant leave with medical personnel?
Yes, they did.
Karen had her own little suicide kit in her purse. And I'm saying that, you know, it's medication. You can overtake anything and it could kill you. So, I mean, smart on the part of the parents for saying, we got to get her into intake over here. If I killed him, I'm going to kill myself. That's one point that's made. The other point that's made is you're going to have to take care of the kids. What do you think?
Yeah. And apparently she was still legally intoxicated at that point.
Yeah.
So it's hard to know, was this a longstanding pattern with her, that when things go badly, when she gets into a certain emotional state, that suicide starts to come out of her mouth as an option? It certainly could be. Is it just the ranting of a drunk person who's not thinking clearly yet? Because apparently they did not keep her that day. Yeah. She was released. Probably as she sobered up, she became, you know, more grounded and more cogent.
It's another really weird thing to say, too. I mean, mm-hmm. I get you get met with tragedy. Your lover dies and you can go to really dark places. But there's there's the kids. And according to her in recent testimony, she was getting closer to the kids and John didn't like it, which I think is probably actually the opposite. But that's the story that she tells. So if she is getting closer to the kids, her reaction is, if you accidentally killed him, you're going to kill yourself. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be more like, I got to be there for those kids? You know, that's what John would want. You know, this is not, I'm going to take myself out of the equation too. And I just find it odd that she even added in there, you're going to have to take care of the kids. I get the, I'm going to kill myself if this happened, and just saying it more figuratively than she was actually going to do it. But going to planning this of like, you're going to have to take care of the kids. It plays along with the context of certain personality traits that we've been talking about, that it's still all about her. She's not even thinking of those kids at that moment in time.
Yeah. Cause how could you do that to the kids? Right. If they lose one person that they love and are attached to, well, I'm going to kill myself too.
Yeah.
So yeah, again, it makes you wonder, is there a pattern of this kind of thing when she's in distress? Could be.
Yeah. There's obviously many more weeks of this to come. So we'll have a lot more to break down as we learn more and more about the mind of Karen Reed. Again, none of it necessarily makes her a killer, but it's sure there's a lot in this this case that's being pointed out far more clearly than it was in the last one. I think the elements were there, but you really kind of had to do some mental mind bending to put things in specific orders and time frames. But when you really see it in the time frame, there's a lot of things that look like consciousness of guilt here. But again, what is that consciousness? Is it, you know, is she really there conscious, or is it unconsciousness of guilt? Is that a thing? Is unconsciousness of guilt something?
Oh yeah. I think that's a really good term. I'm going to steal that one.
Yeah. Because I get that, where it's like, you just kind of know, but you don't.
You're not really consciously accepting it. Yeah. I think that's an apt term.
That okay. Go. Steal that
there you
one.
Go.
Yeah, steal that one from me, and we'll see if it shows up in trial. If Alan Jack's like, have you ever heard of unconsciousness
of guilt?
No, we haven't, but we have on a podcast. There we go. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, as always. Thank you for your insight on this crazy, crazy case.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. She was the perfect wife. Always smiling, always supportive. A pillar of the community. Beloved by friends, adored by family. And secretly researching undetectable poisons in her spare time. Maybe it was the way he chewed. Maybe she just got bored. Or maybe, just maybe, she had been planning this since the honeymoon. But if he had just paid attention, if he had just known what to look for, if he had only subscribed to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and learned the red flags, he could have heard every episode of Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Ad-free, and before everyone else, he could have seen it coming. Instead, he's 6 feet under, and she's shopping for husband number two. Don't be like him. Subscribe now to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts.